Sure. I mean, I'm not having trouble understanding what the deck itself did.
Yeah.
I just think if you're going to call it Eternal Command, like if you told me, oh, I play Twin, that's, you're on that plan.
Which color Twin? Which color Twin? Blue red Twin?
I'm just saying Twin, just Twin. Pod? No, well, you'd call it Kiki Twin. You'd be like, oh, I got Eternal Witness and fucking Cryptic Command, so it's Eternal Command. Oh, I got Kiki and Splinter Twin, so this is Kiki Twin. Or I got the Deceiver X-Ray, so now it's Kiki Deceiver Twin. That's what you're doing, and that's why it's fucking stupid.
No, it's not what I'm doing.
It's exactly what you're doing.
It's not what I'm doing.
Papa loves Mambo, Mama loves Mambo. Look at him sway with it, getting so gay with it, shouting ole with it, wow.
Welcome to Pack One, Pick One Podcast.
Fucking twit.
Episode 6. We're going to talk about archetyping. The presence of aggro on your cube, how deep does it need to be? We're going
to
talk
about... Don't commit to this many talking points. We don't know how long they're going to take.
We're going to try to talk about the presence of Soaring and Mana Crypt and what that does to your cube and whether or not it's necessary to have them in an unpowered cube environment. And then maybe we'll talk about the presence of other archetypes like combo and what that means and things like that.
Sweet.
Casual roundtable discussion about what cards to include in your cube and why. I think it's okay to call it Eternal Command, because isn't that the name of a modern deck?
Yeah.
Which is why you were calling it that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's, who did that? Because they played Aether Vial with Eternal Witness and Venser and Cryptic Command.
I think it was, oh god, I'm going to feel so bad if it's not him, but I think it was Shadow Yasuoka.
I think you're right. I think it was Yasuoka.
I think it was the World Championships.
Yeah.
Like, a few years ago.
Like two-ish mm-hmm. years ago.
It's dope, though. I think...
And Nationals are coming back. That's dope.
Yeah,
Nationals are coming back. Woohoo!
I don't know why you think there's a problem with defining decks by specifically what they do instead of generally what they do. Because specifically, building a blue-green deck that's all about looping Eternal Command, Eternal Witness, Cryptic Command, Mystic Confluence, and like Den Protector or whatever... At its core is significantly different than a deck with Mana Elves and Cloud Post and Primeval Titan and Emrakul.
Well, sure, that's why I wouldn't call my deck with fucking Emrakuls and Mana Elves Eternal Command.
You're right, that's why I would call my deck with all of those cards in it Eternal Command.
I think you're being unnecessarily specific.
I feel like I need to get, like, Jerry Springer on you. Like, how long has she been calling you a punto?
Is that what watching Jerry Springer is like? I've never watched that show.
I don't know. I haven't.
And Alec Hayes has determined that that was a lie. Well, that's Maury, but whatever.
Yeah.
Wow. You can't even keep your daytime TV straight.
Jeez.
Oh, well, fuck me.
So.
All right. So this conversation we're going to have was brought up by my wanting, in my cube specifically, the presence of a faster aggro deck to pressure combo and control decks. Because my cube has gotten, Alec, you and I have talked about this, kind of mid-rangey, right? Like, there's a lot of bigger decks, a little bit of slower decks. Like, there are fast combo decks. We've seen them time and time again. Like, I want that. But the majority of the rest of the decks take a few turns to really set up what they're doing. And I feel like without the presence of, like, a tried-and-true aggro deck, it's very low to the ground, wants to kill you by, like, turn 4 or 5. You know, there's no pressure put on these decks, and so it starts to degenerate into these giant slap fights. You know, like, Mason, you got to draft a Simic Delirium deck, is what I'm going to call it. Sure. With, you know, Eternal...
I hate that even more.
With Eternal Command as like, as, like, your main grind strategy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you're playing things like Ishkanah and Emrakul and, like, Dragon Lotus Homeguard and, like, getting to these big things and, like, just... taking forever for your opponent to kill you.
No, because I had a bunch of 2-mana interactive spells and first picked Kitchen Finks because I was afraid of dying.
Sure. Well, and like, I get that, but I'm just saying, like, your end game was large, right? Like we're playing Emrakul to the Promised Land. Like let's not fool ourselves. We have a giant end game. Uh-huh. We need to take some time to get to that. So like barring having Kitchen Finks in your deck, you know, if there was a traditional mono red aggro deck at the table, like would you say that that would have been a threat to you?
I think I drafted in a way to fight that deck.
Okay.
By picking, you know, the Kitchen Finks and Thrag Tusk and 2-mana interactive pieces that I did. Because when I draft, that is something that I worry about, and I specifically draft to avoid losing to those decks.
Okay.
Even if they don't pop up all the time.
But really, if you had to pick one deck that you're the most likely to lose to, or that your draws are the most dependent to not, like, sit here and die, it's probably something, some very quick, aggressive deck, yes? Because, like, your long game is almost unbeatable. Your recursion was incredible, and the shit you could do with it was super overpowered in that turn 7 plus range. So as long as you don't get run over, you're doing pretty good, right? That's probably your biggest threat. It's not that you can't beat it, or that, man, I really hope I dodge this deck. But, like, of all the things that threaten you the most, it's probably near, if not at the top of the list.
Yeah, I would say, like, your deck was very well set up to beat any other mid-range deck at the table, and very, very well set up to beat control decks, right? Because you had so much recursion and value strapped to everything you were doing that, I mean, you could afford to have a few things countered. You were just going to get them back or play something that was still threatening enough to them anyways. But, like, the fastest aggro decks at the table or a super fast, uninteractive combo deck were probably the two major threats against you. I would say that you would have had, the hardest time beating those decks with yours.
Okay.
Whereas SCG champion Mason Lane, just not threatened by fucking anything.
Here's the thing. I think that deck was actually, like, so close to, like, perfectly where I wanted to be. I just can't see a lot of things. I'm really thinking here, and I just don't think there were going to be a lot of things that I was going to lose to that day.
That's called bias.
Look, I look at a lot of my decks post-build, and I think, like, it's got some glaring weaknesses. I didn't get this that I wanted. These things didn't go my way. That deck, I got it all. Like, I don't want to spend a bunch of time talking about that deck specifically, but, like,
when you finish up
a draft, and you look at your deck and you're like, wow, I have literally every card that I wanted to draft. I hit every single wheel that I wanted to. I have the best way to accomplish the plan that I wanted. Like, I have all of the interactive pieces that I need to make sure that I'm not losing to whatever thing my opponent's doing. I just don't see what I'm weak to. And that was that deck. Like, I didn't feel particularly vulnerable to the 2/1s for 2 when I've got a pile of creatures that gain me life and or put 5 flying blockers into play. Sorry. Oops. Cryptic Command, tap your team down. Snapcaster, tap your team down. Emrakul you. Like, Ishkana, make a pile of spiders, you know?
Sure. All right, fair enough. All right, well, for the sake of argument, like...
Okay, for the sake of argument, there was no super fast aggro deck at the table.
No, we talked briefly before this about our friend Kyle, who drafted Boros, like...
At our last draft.
Taxageddon, I'll call it.
I played Cloud Post, got blown out by the Armageddon.
Yeah.
Well, my argument for wanting a fast aggro deck in your cube is that fast aggro decks already exist in your cube. It's just that people don't draft them. And my second point to that is that there is a certain kind of metagame that develops when you have a bunch of people that draft your cube. And
yeah, you can influence that
based on the cards you put in, but ultimately the play style of the people that you draft with are going to mold your cube to their play style, right? If everyone kind of gets into the mid-range game, if everyone wants to draft mid-range decks, then that's just going to happen, and you're going to see 15th pick Lightning Bolts and Goblin Guides, no matter what cube they're in.
Yeah, for the purposes of this, I want everyone at home to know that there was a 15th pick Lightning Bolt at the end of pack 1.
It's wrong. It's just
it was insane. Up. I don't understand how that happens.
I don't either. It made me lose
a lot of faith in the people that we've been cubing with for years.
It was made me lose faith in you.
What?
It was pretty bad. You passed it. So did he. So did I.
I wasn't in that deck. No, I didn't pass it. I would have snapped that thing up. I was in Burnstorm.
Well, it was 15th pick, so you had to pass it at some point.
Maybe it was... Maybe that's...
As a matter of fact, it was...
I'll tell you what, it got last picked,
like, 2 or 3 seats down from you.
I guess that's true, but I guess I wasn't in Burnstorm to begin with, remember? Because I showed you my picks. I had Walking Ballista and Baral's Expertise.
You're thinking of a different draft.
Oh.
This was the draft at IHOP we did a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. You're right.
You drafted Black Green, maybe? I don't
know. No, Jim and I had Black Green.
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever. Anyway, it's not important.
Yeah.
My point is, if people want to draft a fast aggro deck, it's there, and we've seen it be effective. We've seen it kill people. I think the tools are there personally, but what you are saying, I think, is that you want that fast aggro deck to come together more consistently. And the reason I brought up how specific archetypes can get are, we might go another 25 drafts before we see someone put together another Sultai Delirium deck. 25 drafts, that might be a year's worth of cube drafting before we see someone put together a deck that's in a similar space, or the same exact space that I was in a couple weeks ago. But you think of that as a really specific, weird, fringe, you know, exact combination of cards that came together. Whereas you think of an aggro deck as just a generalized pile of anything that are, you know, any combination of 100 different cards that just
surely
happen to
be in
your
cube. An archetype, maybe.
Sure, yeah. Well, sure.
Point one to allocate.
My point is that those fast aggro decks can come together. You just have to have someone who wants to draft it,
yeah,
which is few and far between.
In our group.
In our
Let's
group,
let,
people
make it
just
known that this is our group we're talking about. We're trying. I want to try and talk about cube as a format in general.
Sure.
More
so
often than ours,
for anyone else's cube in the world.
Yeah.
As long as you have someone motivated to draft the deck that you're thinking of, the archetype that you're thinking of, the cards are in your cube in whatever capacity. I promise you that if we dug into your cube, or anyone else, or most other people's cubes,
yeah,
I can put together a bunch of different decks, right?
Yeah.
Rotisserie style, I can go through and pick out cards and put together a bunch of different aggro decks, especially out of your cube. As a matter of fact, I've been wanting to draft like a Wild Nacatl aggro deck for a while. I just have only gotten to draft once or twice.
Yeah.
It's not impossible to put these decks together. It just might not happen every single week. Out of 25 drafts, maybe you only hit that specific kind of aggro deck 3 or 4 times, and maybe you hit a different aggro deck a few times, and, you know, it changes week to week depending on who's there and what they're drafting. You don't see 15th pick Lightning Bolts super often.
Never.
But
not once.
When
until
you do,
now.
It means someone probably should have, like, oh, maybe this is open. I'll pick it. I already have a young Pyromancer. I guess I'll try the old a Lightning Bolt combo out.
It's old
the combo
alpha staple.
The combo is when they're at 3 life and you have a Lightning Bolt.
When I think folks are sold on a certain way that aggro decks work.
Right.
Right? You know, I being a huge proprietor of the mono red speedy decks.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I draft the white aggro deck, especially if I don't have like the Hymn of the Wilds and the Conspiracies, which are no longer in there, it doesn't feel fast enough. It doesn't feel good enough. It probably can be, and I would say more often than not it is.
Yeah.
I think we can add more support for these sort of decks if we wanted to.
Yeah.
But to say that they don't exist is false, blatantly false, and I think in any person's cube, you need to have some amount of that, not only because there are some players like me who just like turning guys sideways, but because it creates that necessary balance.
Right.
The trick is figuring out how much you can put in there without homogenizing a specific color. We talked about red for a long time.
In the first episode,
that it was
yeah.
just all these aggressive cards and fuck all anything else.
Yeah. Or like we had a couple wildfires and a couple like rolling earthquakes and some planeswalkers you could string together every now and then, but like there was no identity for red other than mono red aggro, which is what we tried to avoid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if you saw the guy playing green, he plays the second mountain, you're like, oh, I'm going to get wildfired. You know, like.
Before we move on and I forget, I want to bring this right back to what I was talking before earlier about metagaming and your
yeah.
play groups.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In our group, you keep talking about your cube is getting more and more mid-rangey. And I don't think that's a symptom of your cube, because I think there are a lot of things that are low and aggressive that you can do. I think that's a symptom of the players. The players draft these big, goofy decks
yeah.
Every single week consistently, because that's, one, what they know how to draft. for a lot of people who don't cube super often, or even in some cases when they do, they stick to certain archetypes.
Yeah.
I can't tell you, and you guys obviously know this, how many times I've seen someone go, oh, bemoan the fact that they're going to pick one, pack one, an upheaval or a primeval titan. They just go, oh, every cube draft, I guess, I'm just going to get stuck with this deck. Everyone's going to pass it to me. Oh, boy. And they slam the card. And it's not even a pick one, pack one. Maybe it's a pick one, pack four. Or
yeah.
Pick four, pack one.
Yes, and more
just,
packs.
And they're just, man, bummer. I got past Gristlebrand fifth pick. Alakazam. I guess I have to be in Reanimator. There's no other choice for me. And they slam it. And that's obviously not true. You could pick any other card in that pack. You can really do whatever you want. If you're only seeing the cards for the archetype that you always draft, it probably means you need to check yourself, take a step back, and think, like, am I
about to wreck myself? And I would have said that with much more zeal, I'll have you know. I love the Craig Daddy.
Yeah.
People get so
locked
focused.
In. Yeah, they're very locked in.
They lock themselves into these archetypes that they don't need to, okay? No one's wrenching your arm and making you draft this upheaval deck. Maybe one week the upheaval deck's super open and your deck's great. Maybe the next week it wasn't very open, it sucks, but you saw an upheaval, you picked it because you had to, and your deck's not very good and you go 1-2. I mean, these things happen when people get too much tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And they just focus on
certain
cards.
I can admit the last, like, barring maybe once, the last like five drafts I've been doing Burnstorm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and like, I do it all the time because when we add new cards to our cube, I always like to try them out. Or if a card's not getting enough love, what I like to do is I pick it, then draft around it so that I can smash everyone's dicks and prove to them how good the card that I like is. Whether it's Eldrazi or Champion of the Parish or a Crackling Doom if you ever put it in. I mean, like, whatever it is, I will just pick specific cards because I really want to do well with them so that I can show everyone else.
Mason, tell us about Delver of Secrets.
No, I hear what you're saying. Like, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I was on the Reanimator train because I love it. It's a stupid deck and it does dumb things. And eventually, like, people put me on it. And correctly so. More often than not, they were correct that I was going to try and do that.
Yeah.
Now, recently, to test myself as a player and because I feel obligated as a member of a Cube podcast to do more than one thing besides rip on Mason, that I was going to do other things, draft these other cool decks. I've seen you guys do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've gotten punished for it. I haven't fully read all of the cards. I made some sloppy plays.
Yeah.
You know, still emerged with more wins than losses, but nonetheless, like, I see all of these things come together and I want to do them.
Yeah.
In fact, it was a bit different environment before some of these changes, but when you were talking about nobody drafts the aggro decks, I just kept drafting aggro decks, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes you get blown out, and you feel really dumb. Like, again, you're also assessing risk. You are assuming that if they are alive by turn five, things are probably going poorly.
Sure.
But nonetheless, all of these things can happen. They do exist. Yeah. And they're available. You made the mention that, you know, folks have to want to draft it. And I think that's ultimately what it comes down to, is that aggro decks, they're not exciting, right? Or, well, maybe not to some.
Yeah.
What they do is very streamlined, very straightforward, and
they have a linear game plan.
Yeah, and the point of Cube is to have fun.
Yeah.
And some folks don't have fun in the ultra-competitive environment, whereas we all know at least a handful of people who, if you put them on the MTGO cube, would just draft aggro all day just to go infinite.
Yeah.
Like, it's exclusively for the competitive aspect.
Yeah.
You know, I try to find myself somewhere in between.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want to crush all of the nerds.
Yeah.
At any point. But I don't want to do it playing dumb cards. Like, I want to have some fun. I want to try this archetype.
Yeah.
You know, I want to get punished for my play mistakes so I don't continue to make them and look like an idiot in front of people. That's how you learn.
Yeah.
That is how you learn. Shame is a hell of a motivator, folks.
Yeah.
See, I think when you notice metagames emerging in your cube groups, you can, if you want to win at cube drafting, you can actually exploit them super hard. The first few years you had your cube together, there was a time where I drafted Braids and Smokestacks and those types of effects.
Last episode.
Yeah. we mentioned, I drafted those things a lot, yeah. like to an excessive amount every single week, week in, week out.
Yeah.
And I think it was a couple of years before, and I 3-0'd a lot. I yeah. won a lot of cube drafting. There was this time where I was keeping track of how many cubes I won in a row, 3-0'd, and it was a lot of them. I yeah. mean, it was 8 or 9 in a row, and I was wanting to go a full year. Didn't happen, unfortunately. I tried to draft something else. I think it was like Jeskai Aggro.
Did he 3-0'd our cube at SCG Milwaukee.
but when you notice these like metagames emerging, you can actually take advantage of them, right? So if you notice everyone's getting bigger and bigger and more mid-rangey and more mid-rangey, or more combo-oriented, mm-hmm. for instance, Josh, yeah, and yeah. you think to yourself, well, I want to win some cube drafts. What should I be doing? Maybe you should look at drafting an archetype that takes advantage of that. So either some kind of aggressive deck that will punish players for taking too much time to set up, a resource denial deck, like what I did with Stacks for a very long time. When you notice everyone in the cube is going bigger and bigger and bigger, what you can do is just turn the corner, go lower and lower and lower,
yeah,
and
right
drive
on
the game to a point where other players aren't expecting to have to play. Maybe they're super jazzed up because all of their recursion and their Emrakul and their planeswalkers give them this unbeatable late game, and you go, that's awesome, I'm going to start strip mining, wastelanding, staxing you, balancing you, playing fast mana so that I can get my creatures on the board super early, and hitting you with discard spells so that we never get to that point. I'm going to attack your mana, I'm going to attack your cards in hand, I'm going to attack your cards in library. Whatever it is, whatever axis your opponent isn't prepared to fight on, you're going to attack them there so that they never get to their game plan. And that can be in a whole bunch of different ways. Hell, maybe you think everyone's going super mid-rangey and combo-y, I'm just going to draft every single counterspell in the cube.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go way slower, right? I'm not going to try to put anything on the board for the first 10 turns of the game. And then once my opponent's kind of punched out and drawn too many lands, then I'll finally get around to ending things. Maybe after a Sphinx's Revelation for 10.
Yeah, go you be can, the fun police, night sticking people's heads in for trying to play
If you go
Dirtles.
Way to the left or way to the right, you can catch people who are driving down the center.
Yeah.
And those kind of metagames were very specific things that if you notice your whole cube group is doing, you want to crush some nerds. I mean, that's the way I would do it. And drafting the aggro archetype in your cube feels like it's in that space to me. Like, if other people don't want to do it and you really want to, I think you can crush people with it.
Sure.
I'm not going to do it per se. There are way too many sweet things I want to draft. But that won't stop me from picking Kitchen Finks first every single time, because I don't want to lose to that deck personally. I've lost to a lot of mono red decks over the course of my life, and I can't go through a draft without thinking, how am I going to beat a Goblin God on turn 1, and how am I going to beat a Vedalken Shackles on turn 7?
Yeah.
How am I going to beat an Elspeth Sun's Champion when they drop it and wrath my board, and how am I going to beat 10 points of burn at the end of the game? And doing those things during your drafting process, checking those boxes. This is how I'm going to beat this. This is how I'm going to beat that. This is in my sideboard for when I come up against this. Those kinds of things will give you a lot more match wins in your queue when you just start figuring out your game plans against everything. And when you get to the end of the draft and you haven't checked off half your boxes and you're like, man, I'm weak to this and this, and if someone hits me with a Thoughtseize into a Braids Cabal minion, I'm just going to fucking die. Then, congratulations, maybe you could have done something different during your draft.
This episode's becoming about meta-drafting instead of, you know...
I don't remember all the things you said at the start of your...
Well, in that case, we'll segue into the next little bit that we talked about. So we need these quick decks. They don't necessarily have to be aggressive, but if you want to go low and otherwise speed up to beat these big, durly, you know, decks or these mid-rangey decks...
Mm-hmm.
The presence of Mana Crypt and Soul Ring in the cube heavily influences that, right?
Yeah.
It enables certain strategies to be a little faster, or for the decks that are generally slower, it allows them to keep up with these decks, or to regain some of that tempo as a result, yeah. right?
Or be a more explosive start against, like, the combo decks that would normally beat them.
Right.
You know,
I mean, the other side of that argument, of course, is that these decks that already do these things get much better when they have them, or at least generally speaking. So, let's talk about Soul Ring and Mana Crypt, because when this idea was pitched to me, Josh was like, I want to cut these. And I about gave birth. I was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we talked about it. They're super powerful cards, and that's why they exist to begin with. That's part of the cube aspect. But also, I think that these are sort of a they create a sort of balance that I think is important in our cube. You know, especially when we have so many other mana rocks. Like, if it was just those two, I'd think it was absolutely essential. It's not just those two.
Yeah.
But I like having these in there to kind of keep that hook in there, and then also let you do some really stupid broken things every now and then. You know, kind of like the Delver of Secret argument that Mason makes a lot. It changes dramatically how your game plays when they're in your openers.
Right.
You know, I mean, maybe you could make an argument that Mana Crypt is, like, way out there. I mean, yeah. Soul Ring is definitely good, but, like, Mana Crypt...
Yeah.
Especially in a cube environment, it's harder to get, like, actually murdered by it.
Mm-hmm. So, Josh, what do you think? Do you think balanced magic happens with Mana Crypt and Soul Ring?
Well, I'm going to preface whatever I say with, for the listeners at home, we're talking about it in an unpowered cube environment.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
Like, obviously, also if you're playing with the Power 9 and, like, maybe you're playing with, like, Time Vault and stuff, obviously, Soul Ring, Mana Crypt, like, they're just
part of it. Yeah, I got no arguments there. Like, yeah. Those two cards are arguably more powerful than Moxen.
Yeah, there is certainly an argument to be had.
If you ever, like, watch people Vintage Rotisserie draft, those cards get picked higher than a lot of Moxen all the time.
Yeah.
So, if in your unpowered cube, you want these two cards that are technically not on the Power 9, but are, like, significantly more powerful than pieces of Power 9, where does that leave you?
All right, well, I'm going to answer your first question, like, no, I don't think balanced magic happens when you have Soul Ring and Mana Crypt in your game.
Weird. That's not what Alex said.
Yeah. Huh. I think that...
I think you're clearly misinterpreting what I said, and I'll prove you wrong later.
So, all right, so I think that Alex has some very good points. Like, because I originally, you know, this conversation that we're having came up because I texted Mason and said, Mason, I want to cut these cards. And he goes, okay, I can see it. That's a natural progression of the cube because we've kind of been dialing things back a bit. With the way we made some changes that, like, you know, there isn't, like, a super fast mono red deck anymore. There's, you know, now you just got to think there are aggressive decks in the cube. Mm-hmm. But there's not, like, my cube is far from the traditional sense of what most other people's cubes are at this point, mm-hmm. right? And I was like, okay, Mason's on my side. Like, yeah. And then I came down and I told you, Alec, and you're like...
And your girlfriend and your roommate ganged up on
you. Yeah, my girlfriend, who's cooking in the kitchen, goes...
Phrasing.
For your listeners at home, like, she listens to us talk about Magic a lot, and she's played Magic, but she's certainly not, like, near our level.
A Magic player.
Yeah, she's not a Magic player, right? She just goes, why would you want to cut Soul Ring? Isn't it really powerful? Isn't that the point of cube? And so...
Boom!
So, but then Alec, you know, explained to me what he just explained to all of you. And so I'm a little torn. I see both sides of the coin. I think that they are, like, the times that they're explosive stick in people's memories, right? Uh-huh. And they create a lot of the feel bads when, you know, you've drafted this, like, sweet deck. You've gotten, you know, like, Mason, you were talking about your deck earlier. Like, you got every wheel you wanted. You got all these things. Like, the deck just looks great on paper. And you sit down and your opponent goes, turn one. Or this happened to me. I'm sitting there with my Burnstorm deck, and I'm playing against Jess, and she goes, I have to mulligan again. She goes down to five, and she goes, land, birds, crypt, go. Turn two, Sigarda, Host of Herons. And I was like, I guess I can't win, right?
Cool.
And it's like, all right, that was a great game of Magic.
That was sweet.
Yeah, like, so, like, there's just these times where it's just, like, it creates almost, like, it feels like Twin on turn four in Modern, but it's on turn two in Cube, and it's like we didn't even get. It's like you're playing actual Vintage in an otherwise non-Vintage environment, right? And it's just like these weird spiky games that happen just out of nowhere, and it creates a lot of, like, feel bads when you've. I mean, I don't know when everybody else at home cube drafts, but, like, a lot of our cubes happen at 10 o'clock at night on a Friday after FNM. Everybody's kind of, like, dog tired, but they're, like, really ready to have some fun. They've been, you know, jonesing for it all week long, and then they're like, yeah, sit down. Oh, my opponent played a Soul Ring and killed me on turn three.
It's like, sweet. That's
great.
Like turn one, Thalia, Heretic Cathar. My first land comes into play tapped because obviously.
Yeah.
And then my opponent played an Angel of Invention, and I'm dead. Awesome.
Yeah. So,
good,
like,
everybody, I'm really proud of us.
Yeah. So, like, I think that while your points are very valid, Alec, and I think that there's more often than not, these cards aren't in your opener, right? Like, and they do give a boost to the decks that need them against the faster decks, and they give some awesome explosiveness to the decks that really want them.
And they can sometimes just be legitimately awful.
They can.
Like, when you pull it up on turn 7, odds are good it's not that great anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it can. The same can be said about the single best card in the game, which is Black Lotus, or the actually best card in the game, Ancestral Recall, which is always good no matter what turn it's on, so it doesn't really apply there. But saying you can draw a Sol Ring on turn 7 and it's just like drawing a land, well, yeah. But that land you just drew on turn 7 sometimes lets you win the game on turn 2.
Yeah.
It does not feel great. It's like having a Ley Line in the Void against a Dredge deck. Like, you open up your opening 7 and you go, oh, like, that's cool. 1 out of 10 games, my opponent's just dead. Cool. Good game. That was fun.
Yeah, the other 9 you get run board. Over very early.
You
yeah.
don't! This you is don't! You're playing a perfectly normal game of Magic. Just so happens you have better draws than half the people at the table. And depending on the power level of your cube, Mana Crypt and Sol Ring or the Moxen or Black Lotus, whatever it is, get regulated in some way. But we're talking about an unpowered cube that just has Mana Crypt and Sol Ring. If you lay the cube out and you go, what's the best card? Okay, it's Mana Crypt or Sol Ring. Okay, what's the second best card? It's Mana Crypt or Sol Ring. What's the third best card? Who knows, right? It depends on what you like to draft. Maybe you think it's Lightning Bolt. Maybe you think it's Goblin Guide. Maybe you think it's Elspeth, Sun's Champion. Maybe you think it's Baral's Expertise. Who knows?
Eternal Witness.
Cryptic Command. Mystic Confluence. Not naming a lot of black cards here.
Recurring Nightmare.
Whatever you think, you know, you really enjoy drafting. Demonic Tutor, Vampiric Tutor, right? Like, yeah. These are all cards. People can argue until the cows come home which of these cards are better, but at the end of the day, when you open up a pack and it's got a Mana Crypt or a Sol Ring, there's really no decision to be made there. If you're passing those cards, you're only doing so out of protest, not because you want to win or because you want your deck to be good.
Unless you're Matt Borthwick and you chose, like, you know, Titania Protection.
I asked him immediately after why he did that, and he went, you know, I guess I just didn't really think about the fact that it was a Sol Ring. Yeah, weird. No reason for it, right? No. And I've gotten second pick Sol Rings where my opponent, or where my, you know, the person passing to me looked through the pack, didn't notice that there was a Sol Ring and just passed it. And I'm like, wow, this is great. Why would you pick that? And they're like, what?
Huh? Yeah, well, they earned that. That's not fair.
I reference rotisserie drafting a lot, but if you've never rotisserie drafted with your cube, I would recommend it. Because when you do, you get to see the people around you and what they really want to draft, right?
Yeah.
There's no question of, well, this was in my opening pack and it just seemed powerful, so I went with it, or this is just the archetype I got, quote, forced into. No, it's exactly what they wanted to draft, what they thought was going to be powerful, and if you lay out your unpowered cube with a Sol Ring in it, and you rotisserie draft it, you will see that that Sol Ring is going to get picked first. Yeah. Outside of some really outlandish thinking from some member of your group. They think bribery is the best card in the world, okay? They're going to pick that Sol Ring because in an unpowered cube environment, Sol Ring is far and away, yeah. And Mana Crypt, are far and away better than everything else that's going on in that cube.
I don't think that's
Once you cut those off the top, the argument for cutting the most powerful card in a cube is, well, then they'll just be something else that's the most powerful, right? That's the argument for banning cards in every format. Well, you could ban
X card.
Emrakul, the Promised End, but then something else will just be the best card. Then Smuggler's Copter will just be the best card. Well, you can ban that and Reflect Image, but then Scrap Heap Scrounger is just going
to
be the best
card.
Well,
there's
whatever
always
going
to be a top of the heap. There has to be, but those cards get banned because it's just not a fun play experience.
But it doesn't have to be that way in Cube. In Cube, you don't just control what cards you're playing, or you don't just control what cards exist in Magic. You control exactly, down to a T, what appears in your cube. You control every minute detail in that cube, including out of every single card that's ever been printed in Magic, what your players have access to. And when you say, well, there's Mana Crypt and Sol Ring are the best, those are the good cards, and then there's every single other card I put in my cube, what are you leaving your players with an option with? If you cut those two off the top, suddenly everything's opened up. Who knows what the best card in the cube is, right? I don't know. As a matter of fact, if anyone listens to this, if you could, for me personally, take a look at our cube list. Assuming that Mana Crypt and Sol Ring isn't in, tell me what you think the best...
Aren't in.
Tell me what you think the best card in the cube is. What you're going to pick first, what you think other people would pick first, whatever it is, what you think the best card in the cube is, and I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Well, since I'm the only one at this table who actually reads articles on MTG Salvation about cube, they do a power rankings every year, and they just finished their most recent one. I suggest you guys look at that. They actually, the community votes on the best cards in each, the best 20 cards in each color, and then they tally all the votes for each of those cards and compile the best top 20 cards in cube as a format total. And I believe I posted this in the cube group, like, as each color was getting done every week.
Yeah, we saw this last year.
A while ago, and I just didn't do it this year, but obviously most, like, nine of the slots are the power nine, but they're not actually all, like, just listed right in a row. Like, there's different things. And actually, there's a couple that, like, I think the mocks are all clumped into one slot, actually. And then the rest of the power are, you know.
Well, yeah, because again,
and then
Time
Twister makes it way dog on the list. Like, 20th place, dragging behind. No one likes the Twister.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think for the purposes of, since we're talking about, like, powered and unpowered and soaring and all that stuff, like, Twister is probably the piece of power that you could put in an unpowered cube environment, and it wouldn't warp it so heavily.
Well, sure, right? Because outside of corner case scenarios, it's just another Wheel of Fortune. It's not that far removed from just being Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah.
It's in a better color, admittedly. Not always in a better color for comboing, though.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Mm. Mana Crypt and Sol Ring lead to one-sided, uninteractive games in any time they're featured in someone's deck, which is every single cube draft, because there's no reason to not play them. Every time you sit down at a full cube, if you've got a 360, that means an 8-man, someone's going to have Mana Crypt or Sol Ring in their cube, or in their decks, and it's going to lead to some number of miserable games of Magic being played. And, like, it can be fun for the person who's winning, as most games are, or you could chop them, open up the rest of the cube, and tell people, hey, you have to actually play Magic for all your games, not just the ones that you don't get as lucky as you could. And I'm talking about cutting cards for power level reasons now, which is not something that I always advocate for doing, but when you have, I mean, we're talking about, you can build your cube environment however you want, and if you're going to scale, if you're going to cut some cards for power level reasons, a la Black Lotus and Ancestral Recall, then I don't know why you would stop there.
Because there are two cards out of 360, or however many you have in your cube, because you don't open them in every hand, because part of the fun of being able to do dumb things in cube means being uninteractive and just dick-stomping somebody for one game. One game! I've had Sol Rings in my decks and didn't fucking draw out the whole goddamn tournament. And it just felt really bad. It happens. You know, maybe you don't like getting blown out by that, and I don't think anybody enjoys getting shit on by it. Of course not, right? These things exist for a reason. And I think that by cutting these, not only do you put a couple extra turns on the turn clock just on principle, but then a lot of these decks can go completely unchecked, and the format just gets super dirtly and really big.
No. That's the... You keep talking about Mana Crypt and Sol Ring like they only get featured in these decks that end the game really quickly, but they don't. You can just play Sol Ring and then play a Wrath on turn 2 against your opponent's shitty creatures, or a Sphinx's Rev powered out by a Mana Crypt on, like, turn 5 or 6. Or whatever shitty fucking slow-ass way to win the game you have, are also great with Mana Crypt and Sol Ring. That's the problem. You can stick it in your fast combo deck, you can stick it in your fast aggro deck, you can stick it in your shitty slow mid-range deck, or your slow control deck. You can put it in whatever you want.
Yeah, but it doesn't make your slow control deck so much better that just having the Mana Crypt or the Sol Ring... In fact, you probably don't want the Crypt in your slow control deck. Beware, guys, you will die to it sometimes. Yeah. I don't think it puts that so much over the top. Like, oh my god,
so
we need to cut.
It does, though. How are you supposed to beat someone that is two mana ahead of you the entire game for no loss. They Ball didn't lightning. Do anything. They just, oops, I'm gonna win, probably.
See, but you just said it right there. You said probably.
Yes, because sometimes you can drool on yourself and keep, like, mana crypt, no lands, hope I get there, didn't get there, and I'm dead. Like, well, I mean, yeah, you can lose with mana crypt and Sol Ring in your hand.
Well, you can also lose with Sol Ring in your deck, because you just don't have it every opener.
Yes, that's true. You do have access to it somewhere, though, which means I can just run hot and be terrible at Magic and terrible at cube drafting, but, like, I drafted, I don't know, what sounds absurd, 5 swords and a pile of idiot creatures, and oopsie, I've got Sol Ring, so I guess I'm just running hot, like, drawing in my opener all the time, and just 1-2 punching everyone out of this cube draft. Haha! I'm the winner.
Yeah, I mean, you could also get hit by a fucking meteor. Is it likely? No. And I'm telling you,
I've watched it happen so many times over the years. I've watched people in the finals, and yeah, you're not playing for anything. We're not exactly high-stakes Magic here, but, like, there is pride on the line. You want to win, and then just fucking land Mox Diamond, Mana Crypt, Signet, Sol Ring, Wheel of Fortune, moving on. That's the game, okay?
And that's awesome!
It's not awesome, it sucks. It sucks to be the guy who did it to someone else, because you are worthless. And I will say that confidently, wow, knowing that I've done that so many times over the course of my life. Because fast mana is better than everything else in Magic. Magic's only about, like, a couple of key things at the end of the day, and that's making a bunch of mana and having more cards than the other person. That's why Black Lotus and Ancestral Recall are the best cards in the game, because they make mana and they give you more cards.
And that's awesome!
It's not awesome! Cube is the one format in Magic you can get away from that! You can make it about whatever you want! It doesn't always have to be about just making more mana, just getting more cards.
Well, fine, then play someone else's bullshit cube that takes like 100 fucking years to finish
Oh my god, you're insufferable.
I want to insert the epic Rack Battle of History narrator at the end of this now. Who did it better? You decide!
Seriously, Mason does look like he's about to reach across the table and hit me.
Yeah. It's just absurd to be arguing. That's like saying, man, isn't it super fun when you get Channel Emrakul on turn 2? I don't know about you, I really like doing that, guys. Let's do the 4-of rule, but just for channels and Emrakuls. Because if we can make Channel Emrakul happen more often, I think that's positive experience. You know,
maybe now you're being dramatic.
Maybe this guy doesn't cube draft very often. Maybe he's not very good at it. But you know what? He deserves to have his day in the sun, too. Maybe he'll get the Channel and Emrakul and be able to crush everyone's dick. Whoopee! Isn't that fun?
Dude,
hey, they are going to have it. Some games, they're just going to have 2 channels in their hands. Then what? Probably going to lose, because you can't do much with that until you draw the Emrakul, I guess.
Ooh. This, ladies and gentlemen, is why we don't have a Twitter account.
Because I would be making great points
over the course of 7 or 8
tweets. Because 240 characters is not enough to talk about the things we talk about. And then Alec would be making dick and fart jokes and wasting tweet space.
I can't believe you said wasting tweet space and actually meant it.
I mean, Donald Trump is a waste of tweet space, okay?
But you sound just like him! You're going to the absolute worst case scenario, putting in strawman argument. Let's add 4 channels.
Make cube great again, add more Sol Rings. Do you just want
to
add...
No, you're trying to ban Sol Ring.
I am trying to ban
Sol Ring. Didn't do anything to you. Sol Ring is not responsible for this magic terrorism that you're claiming is happening.
Sol Ring does something to me every single week. Okay, I am so exhausted of drafting fucking Sol Ring. I've had Sol Ring more than any other person in our cube group consistently over the years. Every fucking week it finds its way into
my
hands.
We did actually have an inside joke at one point where we were always like, oh, did Mason just open Mana Crypt and Sol Ring again? Because you had them in your stack of three
every
packs.
Every week.
Yeah, it was
and
ridiculous.
And when I didn't, someone passed me
yeah,
a Sol Ring.
Yeah, you'd have third pick Sol Rings. Like, it was... Oh,
ouch.
So... It's insane. And those are, by the way, complete variants. Those are literally two people went blind. And one got hit by a meteor. And then it's like, wow, Sol Ring!
Oh, did we queue with Hooglin? Someone just forgot what these cards were.
Mana Crypt's a terrible card. It kills you. It doesn't. I don't like high variance on my magic cards, so I don't choose to draft Mana Crypt.
Oh, man.
Whatever. Anyway.
Is it going to be a running joke that we just shit on England through this whole podcast? He's going to listen to it one day, and he's going
to,
like.
He'll never listen to it.
That I don't. Dude, so I was telling Alec earlier that I doubt you. Because you just don't listen to a lot of podcasts or, like, read articles and stuff. On Salvation, like, you haven't been a part of the Q community online much.
That look of resentment.
I'm just waiting.
You're making some bold assumptions.
Well, do you?
No.
Oh, I was like, here's your public forum to prove me wrong. Like, no? Okay, all right.
That contempt.
Usman Jamil, he's a guy who used to write for Star City Cube Articles, and now he writes for Gathering Magic. He commented on our podcast, and he's drafted our cube a bunch on Cube Tutor. I thought that was really cool. Yeah, so, like, awesome. Don't say celebrities won't. Like, magic celebrities.
No,
like,
just Jeff Hooglin specifically. That guy's so far up his own ass, I don't think that's gonna...
My cube doesn't exist in the darkness.
In the like, space of
does
Jeff
his
Hooglin's
ass have
world.
Wi-Fi?
It's... yeah, he uses Linux, though. Yeah, I don't even know if you can get internet on. I don't know how computers work. That just seems wrong to me.
I don't know. But yeah, Usman does the Third Power Cube podcast, and which was the inspiration for us doing this.
Hey, shout out to that guy.
Yeah, thanks, Usman.
Dope shit. All right.
Usman.
What do we want to talk about next? Sol Ring and Mana Crypt. Obviously should get cut.
No, I'm going to put there's a clear divide. It's obviously, at the very end of the day, left up to you, you're the cube owner. Like, you know, how do you want your environment to be? How variant do you want your, like, your matches to be? I think there are valid points on both sides of this argument. That's why I didn't speak up much. I just wanted to hear you two duke it out. Because I knew you'd have, you know, more coherence.
How much of a goddamn pansy you are.
I am such a big fan of powerful magic. But just high variance, fucking knock your head off the table, see whose deck comes up better.
You like Delver of Secrets!
Yeah, because Delver of Secrets on... That doesn't make any sense. Delver of Secrets and Mana Crypt are very different cards, Alec. Okay? One is a creature that hits your opponent in the head. The other one makes infinite mana.
Infinite mana?
Essentially infinite mana. Over the long enough course of time.
All right, moving on. The next topic, and probably the last one for this episode, is I mentioned to you that I was considering re-adding Twin, and I think I want to open that argument up, or this discussion up, to the idea of combo.
It's too powerful because we have Sol Ring and Mana Crypt.
Behave. Both of you.
If you want to just keep arguing about it, we can wait until the fucking we cut.
No.
I'll fight you. All right? I will put on the gloves. I will fight you.
I want to open up the floor to discussing the presence of actual combo in Q. What that means, breaking it down to, you know, just two-card combos, because a lot of cubes kind of stray away from the idea of, like, you know, your Time Vault, Voltaic Key, right? Like, most cubes don't run Vault Key combo.
Time Vault, also a very expensive magic card.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, if you're playing a power cube, maybe you're considering Time Vault. I've seen a lot of power cubes that don't even touch Time Vault, right? It's just, because having, like, those two card combos, if one person drafts one half of it, like, now you're stuck with this shitty Time Vault. Like, you're never going to use this in your deck anymore, right? Unless you have a multitude of ways to untap it. So, like, you kind of have to craft around instead of a two-card combo. I think the best way to introduce combo to a cube is to craft entire archetypes around that. And we were having a little discussion at the beginning of this about, like, I was saying Twin. You know, we've got, you can play Kiki Jiki, you can play Restoration Angel, Zealous Conscript, Splinter Twin, Deceiver Exarch, Pester Mite, now Felidar Guardian, and Saheeli. Like, there's a multitude of cards that can make this deck happen every draft, if you want it to. Do we think that combo is good for a cube? Where does the line get drawn? Like, I don't know. I'm just opening that up.
Where I would start with is... So, we can talk about Twin, but I want to start with two-card combos in cube, I think are totally acceptable when you're at a minimum number of cards for the amount of people you have drafting. Any two-card combo, I think, is completely unacceptable when you're not drafting your entire cube. So any, most of the versions of the Moto Cube, I think, are over 360.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, they're all 540.
My roommate's powered cube is 450 or something like that. It's, but we only ever draft eight mans.
Did Reed size it down?
I don't know. It hasn't been put together for a while, so.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's been in flux. I've been working too much, so we haven't had a lot of time to work on it. Okay. I've been doing this instead.
Good on you.
Two card combos are horrendous when you're not gonna at least have the shot at both pieces in every draft. The second question to ask yourself is, after... is my cube a 360, in which case I can put in two card combos? Because if the answer to that is no, is my cube a 360? No. Kill yourself. Don't put in any two card combo.
This is assuming that you're drafting eight mans all the time. Right? Like, because
if you do ten mans, whatever.
Yeah, that's... or we touched on sub 8-person drafts. Like, if you have a dedicated, like, Winston stack that you always draft heads up, like, you can put two card combos in there. But for the purposes of this argument, we're talking
What size you want your cube to be drafted at, right? If you... Look, I definitely know people who have put together their cubes, and they don't get to eight people all the time, right? Yeah. Fine. Put two card combos in there as much as you want, whatever. And when you're playing with less than eight people, it's kind of like that sucks, but, like, everyone knows that's something to beware of, right?
For example, Gilded Lotus and Magmatic Force.
But when you should build your cube with the size in mind. You should build it as, this is a 360, I want to do 8 mans. Or this is a 540, you do 10 mans? Is that the size?
No, 450.
450, you do 10 mans, right? Yeah. I could probably do basic math and figure that out. Instead, I'll ask you. That's why I have you to
do it. I was going to say, for someone who cubes as much as you do, there's a lot of little things about cube that you have absolutely no idea about.
It's the little details. I'm more of a big picture kind of guy. Once you've gotten over that hump, the next thing to ask yourself is, how good are the cards individually? And this is where I think people get carried away. Do not kid yourself into thinking that Pestermite, Deceiver, Exarch, and Splinter Twin cards are, quote, fine on their own. They're horrendous. People really like to argue that Pestermite's a totally fine blue beatdown creature, as if blue beatdown was really a thing that was going to happen. And it's really... Pestermite's a really mediocre rate for a very mediocre creature that has combo potential. And that's why people like it. No one's ever going to just, like, definitely not have Splinter Twin in their cube and be like, I need Pestermite. That is a card that is essential to a bunch of different archetypes that are right on in there. Splinter Twin, yeah, it's cute when you get to put it on a value creature and get some extra triggers. That's what people did in, like, Rise of the Eldrazi Limited, okay? That is not a space you need to be in for cube. But Time Vault Voltaic Key. Neither of those cards are good on their own. Actually, Time Vault's unplayable. Voltaic Key, you could probably jump through some hoops, but I'm really not seeing it. It's kind of a miss.
Yeah, if we have to think about it this hard, it's probably not that good.
What's a good two-card combo that the pieces are both good? I don't know. Someone...
Mazurek Crawl, Death Priest, and Murderous Redcap.
Those cards are both fucking dope.
Now, that's not a two-card combo.
Greater Gargadon Balance. Wait.
That's kind of a combo?
It's basically a combo, right? I mean, that's a combo, I think.
Gilded Lotus, Magmatic Force.
Those cards are...
Gilded Lotus is great.
That's the best combo in the cube.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who are we kidding? Channel Emrakul.
Yeah.
Channel and Emrakul. Sick combo. Also, both of them are great cards on their own, all things considered. I mean, in an average 360 cube, right?
Yeah.
Both of those cards are pretty great.
You could make a pseudo argument for, like, Entomb Reanimate.
Sure, right. Entomb Reanimate.
Yeah.
Dope combo. Two-card combos, two cards that just very clearly have, like, are in the same basket. Those are the two cards you want to put together. If they're both really good cards on their own, awesome. You shouldn't really have too much of a problem putting those into your cube, because one, when you do get to, when you don't get them together, the cards are still playable on their own. And when you do get together, it's like you completed the quest. You got the payoff at the end. You got paid for the way that you drafted.
Yeah. For example, I think like Zealous Conscripts is just good. Yeah. It's awesome with Kiki Jiki, but Zealous Conscripts, you're never gonna look at it like, oh god, this is terrible. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're pestering my corner case. There are lots of cool things you can do with Zealous Conscripts, and a number of archetypes that enable you to do that with a threat on a body.
Yeah, absolutely. Expertises plus Ancestral Visions is one that I was just thinking of. It's like kind of a two-card combo. Both of the pieces are fine on their own. They don't always come together. When they do, hey, you did it, you get paid off for it. What I'm really talking about are like synergy-driven combos, because Magic at its core at this point in time is really a game based around synergy. We very rarely see decks that are just really great cards at every slot hammering people. Yeah. For the most part,
the general good stuff deck.
Yeah. I mean, you'll see it come up in certain formats now and then, you know, the
Jones. I was saying
a
standard a couple seasons past, like the Abzan deck, right?
Sure.
Was just straight value across the board. They just played the best cards in the entire format, all jammed together.
Yeah.
But like
Jund in Modern,
yeah,
is a good example. But largely Magic is a game focused and driven around synergy at this point, because the cards are all so powerful. It's what they do together that really kind of makes stands apart in the sea of very powerful aggressive creatures or spells. Mm-hmm. So synergy driven combo decks like Storm being a spell power archetype, or Twin, I think, which is just a pile of very good creatures that happen to come together and make infinite combos, I think those synergy-driven archetypes are very powerful, and they are combo-centric. But the two-card combo, hey, I'm just going to find this piece, and that's going to be my deck, are pretty weak.
Mm-hmm.
Individually, it's hard to draft a two-card combo. You never know when someone's going to open up a dry pack three, and they're just going to be like, ugh. Time Vault, I guess I'll take it. Maybe I'll get the key. If I don't get the key, I don't care. And meanwhile, you, who are four seats over and have been drafting to get that Time Vault the whole day, well, now you're dead in the water.
Oopsie. Yeah.
Better find a really good use for that Voltaic key.
Yeah. Well, and even then, sometimes you get the deck together, and as soon as they figure out what you're doing, like, it's so fragile because you're all in on those two cards.
Oh, yeah. You're not playing a format where you have four copies of each of those cards in your deck. I mean, you're just...
Yeah.
That's two. Good luck.
Yeah.
You couldn't draft a reanimator deck if the only cards in your deck were like a reanimator target, a reanimate, and an entomb. You draft an entire deck that does that, and you happen to have those two cards that make up your 1-2 punch. And the same can be applied about Kiki Jiki at this point. Kiki Jiki combo has so many different cards that make it work.
Yeah.
I think you get paid pretty highly for having all those cards in your cube. I mean, Felidar Guardian, I think, is pretty playable. It's a sorcery speed Resto Angel, but it's at least cool.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that it's pretty playable. I think it warrants consideration, and I think we mentioned this in the Aether Revolt review, that, like, if you're playing the Kiki archetype, there's an argument to be had for including Felidar Guardian as another piece of that arc.
Well, it doesn't combo with Splinter Twin, but it does combo with Kiki and the other one, Saheeli.
Yeah.
And Saheeli combos with some of, not all of, the creatures. So those two cards you can easily leave off of your list for your Kiki combo. I think you can also put them in, because they pull you into specific builds of the same deck. I mean, well, Saheeli combos with what? Other than Felidar Guardian. Is it just
Liquid Metal Coating and...
Yeah, now you have to... Then you'd have to put Liquid Metal Coating in your cube.
Yeah, no, I know. I was just trying to think. There was a modern combo list that came out that was like a kill on turn three.
Can it work with Kiki himself? Because Kiki has haste.
You can't have another legendary.
No. Yeah, oh, yeah. Legendaries.
It was Disciple of Vault into Liquid Metal Coating into Saheeli.
And then you Liquid Metal Coating to make a copy
of Saheeli, and then you make another copy of Saheeli, and the first metal copy that goes to the graveyard triggers Disciple, and you just dome your opponent over and over and over and over again.
Cool. when it copies the Saheeli, it copies it as an artifact?
Yes. Oh, no, it changes it into an artifact.
That's dope.
No, that's not true. It copies it as an artifact. It copies, because she copies the artifact or creature, so you copy the first Saheeli and you let the...
Neat.
The artifact Saheeli die, and you just keep doing it over.
That seems cool. Anyway, that's terrible. You'd have to...
Yeah, don't do that in your cube unless you're...
If you had two Saheelis, you could just do Sun Titan. Sun Titan Saheeli, bing, 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 bing.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the way you want to go either.
It's cute and idiot.
Felidar Guardian combos with a bunch of stuff. I guess Saheeli doesn't. But Saheeli's kind of a dope card anyway. I like that card in general. So I might just have it in my cube, and then it's got a combo with Felidar Guardian, and that's cute, but whatever. Felidar Guardian combos with the different Kiki-Jiki creatures, right? It combos with Kiki-Jiki, but not Splinter Twin.
Does it comp? It can combo Splinter Twin, right? Because it returns the permanent to the battlefield untapped. So you just choose Splinter Twin, put it on the copy, tap the copy.
Then you just have infinite tap color guardians, right?
Yeah.
But Splinter Twin, the way it reads, it's at the beginning of the end step, right? So if you allow your...
It's not the beginning of the end step.
The tokens don't get exiled.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So if you wait for your opponent to go to their end step, and then you say, okay, in your end step, I'll make infinite tapped Felidar Guardians.
Yeah.
Untap, attack you to death, kill you.
Yeah.
All right. That's good enough, I guess.
You know what's really funny?
Whatever.
We should do this just for you, because you really like the white cards plus Purphoros plan. You
yeah.
You wanted to do this for a while.
It felt work with Kiki.
Yeah. You know,
Guardian works with Kiki.
We're trying to figure out if it works with Splinter Twin, too.
Oh, yeah. But, so the white cards plus Purphoros plan... If we add Felidar Guardian, you get Felidar Guardian plus Resto Angel, and they just blink each other a million times, and then you dome them with Purphoros.
That actually sounds really sweet, because there are other, like, red-white combos.
The problem is all of those cost 4.
I mean, fine, whatever. If you have Mana Crypt in your deck,
and Soul
just
Ring.
Start playing them on turn 2. Fuck it.
I love this deck already.
It sounds awesome, right? Well, sounds the other sure. combo was what? You wanted, was it Fiend Hunter, Lina Relic Warder, and Metamorph with a Purphoros?
I wanted...
Or just...
Phyrexian Metamorph, Leon and Relic Warder, and Purphoros. Because then you make a Phyrexian Metamorph as Leon and Relic Warder, you exile itself,
and you just keep going back and forth, and you just kill them. Yeah.
And then, boom, they die. Yeah. That's the combo that I've been really wanting to draft lately. But I would totally draft Purphoros and Resto Angel and all that. Yeah, definitely. 100%. That sounds great.
See, but now you get the white, you have, like, two different combos in your Purphoros deck. You're just a mono-white combo deck with splashing Purphoros.
I mean, also, I'll just play, like, Elspeth Sun's Champion in my Purphoros deck. Yeah. I'll play Goblin Welder Wormcoil. I don't care. I'll do it all, man. Fuck it. Purphoros value. Just hit them for 20 with Purphoros. That's the plan. And if you happen to, like, hit them with some Lingering Souls tokens or some Spectre Processions or Squadron Hawks,
woohoo!
All down for it. Purphoros is easily... one of my top, maybe 3 red cards.
In cube.
That card's just, I mean, of all time.
Of all time?
Purphoros is fucking dope! And it does not get enough love. That card is insane! You don't need to empty the wards for that much for Purphoros to kill them. Throwing it out there. That's like a Tendrils. It's really good.
It's better than a Tendrils with empty the wards. Like, it's
way
better. Way
better. Yeah. It's...
Because if you cast 2 spells, you're like, what, 16-ing them off your Purphoros?
12-ing
them? Okay. Yeah. 2 spells.
That was actually the core of my Storm deck a few weeks ago. And I resolved a turn 2 Purphoros because I had a Mana Crypt. And turn 3 or 4, I just, like, made, I don't know, 8 goblins, 10 goblins?
Yeah.
I think it was, like, between 6 and 8 goblins, put my opponent to, like, 4, and they were like, ugh.
Sick.
Dead. Good job. Can't stop the Goblin Onslaught. And that's such a sad Storm turn in any other situation, because you're like, yeah, empty the Warrens with 2 spells cast this turn. Got him. Wood Elves, put in an untapped forest, play a Signet, empty the Warrens. Got him. And they are dead on the spot. That was enough. Killed them. Good work. So, yeah, kind of fun. But synergy-driven combos you can open up, you know, across 10 different cards, 12 different cards, to give you not only redundancy, but the fact that they're all just good cards on their own. Yeah, we already mentioned this. Let's talk specifically about Kiki Jiki. Kiki Jiki combo is sweet because all of the pieces are creatures. That's the sweetest part about that combo, right?
Yeah.
Because it opens you up to a bunch of things like Survival of the Fittest, Birthing Pod, Court of Calling if you run it.
Revel Arc gets him back, and a lot of things combo with him.
Absolutely. There are a bunch of
recruiters,
different...
if you play both recruiters, both go get Kiki Jiki and get some of the other creatures that you can combo with him.
Absolutely. And the fact that it's so many different colors, on the one hand, kind of sucks because you're, Kiki Jiki costs triple red. I have all these different cards and all these different enablers across five different colors, whatever, everything except black, right? To play in my Kiki Jiki deck... But how am I going to make the mana work? Well, fine, but during the drafting process, you can always just cut out a color. You can be like, I'm not playing white, I'm not playing blue, I'm not playing green, whatever it is. And I've got this sick mid-range game plan with all these great creatures, and hey, I happen to have this infinite combo. That's awesome.
Well, it's like playing actual Kiki Cord from Modern just in your cube, right? You just have a bunch of value dudes with the inevitability of just killing them out of nowhere. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kiki Jiki combo, I'm a big fan of.
And, I mean, even if you added in some of, like, the blue guys that you said you don't really like, even if you wanted to do that, it would be very similar to the way it worked in Modern, where it wasn't the combo itself, but the threat of the combo that you always had to be aware of. So you can play, like, the control decks. You can even play some sort of pseudo-Burnstorm and just happen to have...
Oh, yeah, I'm a fan of Deceiver, Exarch, and Pestermite in your cube when you want to have the full Splinter Twin package, but... A common misconception is people lie to themselves about how good certain cards are. I do it all the time.
We
because
know.
I like cards. Shut up. I like certain cards, and I see where they're good, and I want to force... But you can get there's a very close tipping point to where you're justifying a card that is obviously not good, saying that it's good enough on its own in some of these combo decks. Oh, Voltaic Key is good enough. It untaps your Grim Monolith and your Metalworker, whatever these things are, in your artifact theme deck. Well, sure, it can, but you don't need to do that because they're going to be dead because you tapped your Metalworker for 6 mana. Voltaic Key isn't good. Pestermite is not a good beatdown creature. Deceiver Exarch is bad at everything it's ever tried to do, other than be a combo piece. When you have the combo pieces in, these cards are serviceable because... If you don't put the combo together and they wind up somewhere as someone's 23rd card, who cares? I mean, that's dope that they're even mildly playable, right?
Yeah.
But don't trick yourself into thinking that your 2-card combo pieces are good on their own when they clearly aren't.
Yeah.
You can't trick yourself into thinking, well, you know, Pestermite's a good 3-drop beatdown creature because it's a 2-drop or 2-power flying creature. I mean, compare that to every other blue 3-drop in the game that you're not playing. Every Old Man at the Sea or Vendilion Click or True Name Nemesis. How are you ever going to say Pestermite is a good beatdown creature in a world where we have True Name Nemesis? Hell, and fucking put a Night Vale Spectre in your cube. I don't care.
Well, there are a hell of a lot of 2/1 flyers that only cost 2.
Absolutely, the Welkin Tarnza world. They just made a new one in Aether Revolt. Hinterland Bandit, whatever. He's a pirate. He's fucking dope.
Yeah.
Play that guy. Welkin Tarns are generally underrated, I think, anyway, if you want to beat down in blue. 2-power flyers, 1-power 1/1 flyers for one, whatever they are. Like,
what? Well, I think your table would feel super cheated if you put these cards in. They're like, oh, where's the Splinter Twin? You're like, no. That's not a thing.
Deceiver Exarch's just in there because the 1/4 lines up against all the 2/1s.
Yeah, you're weird. I thought you were playing blue beatdown.
Yeah. Super weird.
Yeah. No, nobody does that.
Yeah.
So.
Alrighty. Well.
I think
you
that
touch on anything else.
I don't know. Do you have anything that you've been?
Someone messaged our group page.
Yes, they were asking us about. Last week we were talking about artifacts that could replace the Signets, and one of the suggestions was for the Mind Control Helm. Yeah,
Helm of Possession.
The one where you pay to tap it and sacrifice a creature to mind control a dude.
Okay.
It's like...
I was going to ask what that card did, because I didn't actually...
Yeah, it's Vidalkin Shackles. It costs 4, not 3.
Mm-hmm.
And you can choose not to untap it during your untap step. You pay 2, you sacrifice a creature, and you tap this guy... And you get to mind control their thing. And as long as it remains tapped,
you have you their guy.
Or as long as you control the actual...
What? That is kind of cool. That sounds pretty dope.
The four-man investment off the top is pretty heavy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that
you can't grab it with Trophy Mage, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
But you can cast it on turn two with a Soul Ring.
Oh. Well, fuck me, right? I stole your line. Fuck you.
Yeah, and like every other time you tried to rebut me, it was stupid.
That doesn't sound too bad. I know he had mentioned he used it in a couple different kinds of decks, like green, black, aristocrat style decks, where he uses them to, you know, take their creatures and sacrifice those creatures for value.
Right, or and you had the guys that you wanted to sack yourself for value.
Absolutely. Uses them in his various control decks because. What, with this card, you can take their guy and then...
You have to sack your own guy, pay two, and tap it to take their guy.
And then you can never sack that guy to steal another guy.
No, because once it untaps, they get it back. So.
That makes sense. Yeah. So,
and it's just interesting because all the mind controls are always blue, right?
Yeah.
You have threatened, sure, in red if you choose to play him.
Yeah.
But this gives other decks the option to take your thing.
Finally get rid of my Llanowar Elf that hasn't been doing much for the last few turns. Take away your... blocker that you put down in front of my idiot creatures. I can see it. I mean, that doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, even as like it's not necessarily where you want to be, but like as like an innocuous little curved hopper in like your red deck or something, like you've been beaten down with Goblin Guide, you kind of curved out and then they slam this blocker and you're like, well, play this thing, sack one of my random goblin tokens.
Take
your guy and kill you with the rest of my team, you know, so.
Okay, I could see that. That doesn't sound too bad. We were definitely looking for interesting artifacts put in the section after Signets got cut. That seems pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So I kind of like it. I just got a message, literally 3 minutes ago, from Ryan, our friend who has his comment on Common Cube.
Yeah.
Have you ever considered putting Black Vice in as the cube slows down? And damn it, Ryan, I know you're not listening to this podcast, but we just addressed the cube slowing down, all right? Jesus. Get with the fucking program. I actually think Black Vice is an interesting card in reference to what I was talking about at the beginning of the podcast, which is attacking a format in cube, because if I notice everyone's drafting these slow idiot decks, I might just pick Black Vice pretty highly because I know it's going to be good against a certain percentage of the people that I play against. Once you die enough to a Black Vice, you stop drafting in a way that makes you super vulnerable to Black Vice.
Yeah.
Unless you literally just don't know any better.
Right.
There are definitely people who don't cube draft that often and only know really how to draft a couple archetypes comfortably, and that's just what they stick with.
Yeah.
When you cube draft as much as certain play groups like ours do, for the most part, I would be offended if everyone wasn't pretty cube literate at this point and had a
range. Couple newcomers over the past few months, but like
yeah, sure.
But yeah, our core group certainly like has drafted enough.
I'm not gonna put on the training wheels and slow my cubing down to play down to the lowest common denominator where I'm like putting on the training wheels. Hey, here's some archetypical cards so that you know, really get some signposts for the way that the draft is going to go. And hey, let me explain to you everything. No, you know what? All right, you're a grown adult most of the time. You're in a cube draft. We're at IHOP. Make good decisions. And if you lose, do better next time.
Yeah.
Listen to our podcast.
That unless it's Crypt or Soul Ring, and you can just whine about it for the rest of eternity.
Alec, kill your opponents with their Ugin upticks, okay?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
that's a good one. I actually missed, like, top 8 of an SCG not doing that one, so...
Well, you go! We weren't even for cash. He fucked up on a royal scale.
Well, it doesn't really make me feel any better about punting. I expect him to do stupid shit. You know, like, I want to be able to recognize these sort of things, and I totally glossed over it, you know, almost lost. Still got, like, I think the worst part about it was that I still got rewarded, because he had a shock land, and I just killed him with it. That was the worst. I deserved to lose that game, you know.
I think those are the best. All right.
They can be.
Last thing I want to say, shout out. I put a picture on our page last week during your guys' draft.
Yeah.
The board state was something like 4 tiny little black creatures, like a Braids, a Cabal, a Carrion Feeder, and like maybe 2 other idiots that didn't matter. An Ophiomancer.
Yeah.
Some other idiot. Staring down a board of Gristlebrand Demigod that just attacked.
Yep.
And the guy with all his dorky little black creatures, our friend Andrew, he won that game. And that was fucking awesome.
Yeah, go,
that's
go
a
Pritchard.
Shout out. Old school. That's something I appreciate.
Yeah.
The black aristocrat style. We always make fun of him. He really likes the color black and drafts mono black without fail.
Yeah.
To the point where he's a walking meme.
Yeah,
that is his thing.
Well, and it's really funny because, like, he hadn't drafted the cube. He used to come to every single cube draft. Hasn't in, like, seriously, like, 6 months. Has not
easily
cubed. Sat down for the first time in 6 months last week.
And it's
week.
The first time we had
yeah,
had
and
a
just
mono black
snaps up Obliterator and Scrap Heap Scrounger and Blood Artists. And
I
like,
had Obliterator.
Oh, you had Obliterator? Okay.
And Giroff's Messenger, Carrion Feeder.
Yeah, that's why I was off that deck because he told me he had it.
Oh, sure.
Just, oh, it was great.
Yeah, it was great.
Shout out to him.
Yeah, good on you, Britcher.
Episode 5. It's in the books. Alex an Idiot. Cut Man, Crypt, and Soul Ring from your cubes.
6. This is episode 6.
Dumbass. Cloud Post is awesome. I drafted it. It was super dope.
Yeah. Oh, tell him how great Mirror Pool was.
Oh, dude. I got the copy of Primetime into my Cloud Post.
Yes!
Into the upheaval.
I told you that was going to happen. That was... I think that was one of my key arguments for Cloud or for Mirror Pool was you can get it off of your Primal Titan and then copy to get your other Cloud Post. I am a wizard.
So
it's like everything I say comes true. Everyone should listen to me more.
So I did that, and then I cast Upheaval through 2 tax effects, and I cast it for 14.
Jeez.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, it cost Ooh, 8, so I only got 6 back, but...
Still. Like,
yeah.
Sounds dope.
Well, and then he blew me out of the arm again. So, you know, like, I got mine, too. But, it sucked. But that one turn, I was just like,
really
like,
dope.
That's so good.
Really
that's
awesome. Dope. All right.
Mason, you're going to GP
Pittsburgh.
Tomorrow. Yeah. Yep. Good luck on you.
So I'm going to miss another cube draft. Wow. And I hope you guys see the pictures.
You're like,
super
you
awesome.
Told me, like, maybe 4 weeks ago, hey, we really need to cube draft, like, a lot more so we can, like, really flesh out all the archetypes in your cube. Like,
yeah.
And then you've missed...
Yeah,
every single one of them.
Everyone
since
wants
then.
To like cube draft in fucking during FNM, which can't do that unfortunately. Like I need to play FNM and cube draft while I'm out of town or working. You guys suck, is what it is. You're specifically not drafting with me because you don't want me to crush you. That's what it is. I figured it out. Both are sitting there. How can we up? You're probably having a conversation at work. How can we up our win percentage more in cube? Well, we could draft when Mason's not around.
We could add more soul rings and mana. Just to hear you cry.
4 channels. That's what
you
I want.
The worst.
All right, thanks
you
for listening.
You could call it the 4chan deck. The 4chan shitlord deck.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, hit us up on social media. We'll try to reply with some
expediency.
Answer
every question. We're not that popular yet. Just
fuck off, Mason.
Hit us
You're
up.
Still wrong.
Bye.
He goes to. She goes fro. He goes fast. She goes slow. He goes left. She goes right.
Papa's looking for Mama, but Mama is nowhere in sight.
Papa loves Mambo.